I am joined by Sharon Isbin, world-famous guitarist today, and anyone that's a fan of the guitar pretty much knows you're playing. But for those that are listening today and might not be as familiar, can you take us back in time to what sparked your interest in the guitar and your background, how your career got started?
Well, it's actually one of those odd stories of chance. And I was 9 years old when my father, who's a scientist, was invited to do some consulting work in Italy. So he packed up the family, and we all moved to Italy for a year. And my older brother said he wanted guitar lessons, and his fantasy was to be the next Elvis Presley. So imagine his surprise when my parents brought him to meet a former student of Segovia who was touring in Italy, and Ira said, oh, classical? No, that's not for me. So I volunteered to take his place. So after the year in Italy, we moved back to Minneapolis, where I grew up. And eventually, I became very involved in model rockets and science and thought that's what I was going to do. It'd be at the Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena or something like that. And then I won a competition, and the award was to perform at the age of 14 as soloist with the Minnesota Orchestra for 10,000 people. And I walked out on stage, and I thought, hey, this is even more fun than sending up my worms and grasshoppers into space. I think I'm going to switch gears and become a guitarist.
That's really neat. Now, like many musicians, you got off to a great start in your career, and you became an educator as well. I understand you created the guitar program at the Juilliard School.
This was really an honor to be asked to create and fashion a program for guitar that had never existed before at Juilliard, and I've been doing that since 1989. I've had students from 20 different countries, and many have gone on to become the lead players in those countries. One of my students just won first prize in the biggest, most coveted international competition called Guitar Foundation of America just in July. He's from China, Tengwei Zhang. So it's really a joy to be able to mentor people and give them guidance and to have the freedom, complete freedom, to explore my own touring career. I'm gone about two-thirds of the year, so it's a joy to discover the world through music.
So you're a performer all over the world, and then you're also an educator. Does the educating part really add to your performance skills, do you think?
Well, the way I teach is to really approach each person individually, and one of the things that is hardest for guitarists to do is to learn to play lyrically, to shape their playing like that of a human voice and to give it the contour and the color and the breathing and the phrasing and the nuances and the spices that a voice would have. And the guitar can do that in that we can create sounds between the notes, which you can't do on the piano, for example. So for me, teaching is constantly a process of exploring my own ability to listen and to analyze and to express how to make things better, because to be honest, as a musician, that's what I have to do with myself every day.
Right. And our classical audiences know you as a soloist with major orchestras all over the world and also a chamber musician with many of the top chamber ensembles. But you've also performed with jazz and rock artists. So I'm curious as to how you view the guitar's role as it changes in these various settings.
Well, the guitar is so versatile. It comes from the tradition in this country, not only of folk music, but of rock and pop. And when electric guitar became popular, that set off a whole new direction for the instrument. So it's really well known from all of these different guises. The classical part perhaps is a little bit less well known. And had I not been living in Italy as a kid, I would never have started the instrument. So I think that it is been really fun for me to explore performing and recording with people who have been my heroes, like Joan Baez or Steve Vai or Stanley Jordan. We have a trio called Guitar Passions with Romero Lubambo, who's a wonderful Brazilian bossa nova guitarist, and to work with people like Mark O'Connor, the country fiddle expert, and to explore many different directions that are endemic and natural to the instrument, as much as Alma Española is to Spain and to the guitar and that history.
How do you feel, because the guitar crosses many genres, that it makes a difference in how classical music is perceived today?
Well, I think that one of the things that is always a surprise, perhaps, to presenters is the people who come out of the woodworks to a guitar concert. There's a certain following that is very special to the instrument, and it will bring in people who come from a love of pop music or jazz or folk or rock, and but they love the guitar, so they'll explore something different, like classical. And I think that because I only play music that I really love and that I really believe in, then I can bring my instrument and this whole quality and style of music to those new audiences and perhaps get them inspired to go to symphony concerts as well.
And I know you work with, of course, many of the traditional works, but you also have done a lot of commissions and premieres. How do you see that playing a role?
For me, it's important to be doing something that's of our time as well as something from the past. So I had the honor of working with many composers who've written for me who are major figures in the world today, people like John Coriano and Christopher Rouse, and Tan Dunn, Aaron Kernis, Lucas Foss, the late Lucas Foss, Joe Schwantner, and I've had now at this point over a dozen works for guitar and orchestra composed for me, and in addition to many dozens of solo works or chamber works. So doing arrangements, having composers write for me, it creates a whole new repertory, and one that certainly with guitar and orchestra on the stage has been very important to give the instrument more prominence and more exposure.
Well, some of these arrangements are really the feature of this new album we're talking about today, where you're collaborating with vocalist Isabel Leonard, Alma Española. Can you tell us how you came to work together with Isabel?
Isabel comes from a Hispanic background in that her mother is from Argentina. So Isabel grew up in a household where speaking Spanish was as much native to her as English. And the music of Manuel de Falla, for example, the Siete Canciones Populares Españolas, is something she has performed for many years with piano, but always wanted to do it with guitar. So she asked if I would be interested to explore a collaboration with her, and it worked out so beautifully. She has such a wonderful, lush voice, known to many people through her Metropolitan Opera HD broadcasts, where you can see her in everything from Don Giovanni to any number of extraordinary operas. And this music has been also natural for me because the instrument has so many roots in Spain, and I've loved working with singers. For me, that's the ultimate. And what I aspire to make the guitar do is to sound like a human voice, in addition to having all the rhythmic and harmonic capacities that the instrument is capable of providing. So together, Isabel and I, before our first concert, which was 2014 at the Aspen Music Festival, we spent days and days and hours rehearsing and exploring and fashioning. I would create arrangements of the Garcia Lorca songs because there were none that were really satisfactory for guitar and voice. And Lorca, of course, penned them on the piano. He didn't actually write them down, but we can hear him playing some of these from early 1930s recordings that he did with another Argentinian singer. So it was a joy to have the singer actually assist and guide in the process of saying, look, this is a song about the toreador who goes out with all kinds of pride and bloated assurance that he's going to vanquish the bull, and instead he comes back in the coffin. So each stanza has a different meaning and context, and I have to find a way to express that on the instrument with different techniques and strokes and fingerings and chords and so forth. So all of this is a part of this collaborative process where the guitar is an equal partner with the voice.
And how did you go about choosing the entire realm of repertoire on the album?
It began with our concerts, which by the time we went into the studio to record, we'd already been performing all over the country for 2.5 years. So what we did was each offer ideas and suggestions. We both wanted to do the de Falla songs. That was a no-brainer. And then Isabel suggested perhaps something by Monsalvace from the Cinco Canciones Negras. And there were two that particularly felt like they could work on the guitar. So I arranged the slow one, the Canción de Cuna, and the Canto Negre, which is a very fast dance by a drunken fellow, in fact. And the Garcia Lorca songs, together we listened and selected ones that we both wanted to do. We didn't want to do an entire album of that, but we wanted to intersperse it with a variety of other things. I suggested the Rodrigo Aranjuez Ma Ponce, which I had had a 20-year friendship with Rodrigo and his wife, who penned the lyrics to this particular song, inspired by the beautiful slow movement from his Concierto de Aranjuez, which I'd recorded with orchestra, of course. And Rodrigo's daughter, Cecilia, handed me the score that Victoria, the wife, had penned in 1988 and offered me the chance to be the first to record it. Granada, I mean, who doesn't love Granada? And that song is by the Mexican composer Agustin Lara. And I actually made that arrangement many years ago to play with a Spanish tenor. So everything has a story here. And the Granados song, Andaluza, the title, as you can see, is inspired by Andalusia, where all of this other music comes from. And Granados has his 150th anniversary this year.
Musically speaking, is there anything you'd like our listeners to be aware of or listening for when they listen to this recording?
Well, I was very fortunate to have the same team that I had worked with on Journey to the New World, which actually received a Grammy, and Guitar Passions, which is David Frost, the producer, and Tim Martin, engineer. They know my sound, they understand it, and they know how to really make that bloom, as does David with voice. So together, I would say they have managed to capture a lot of the colors and qualities of a nuance that a listener can listen to when, for example, and I don't use a pick, I'm using my fingernails and the flesh of my finger, when I get a very bright metallic sound to create a certain effect versus a very dolce, caressing kind of sound versus one that has harmonics, that has vibrato, that I like to say brings soul to the life of a note, or the little wisps of sound in between notes that sound like a human voice. We call them portamento.
Will this lead to another recording with Isabel, or what's on the horizon for you next?
Well, I definitely want to record with Isabel a work that Carnegie Hall commissioned for us for their 125th anniversary this last year. We did a sold-out show there, and it was commissioned by the American composer Richard Danielpour, inspired by Rumi poetry. Very, very exotic and sensuous as well. I'm saving for an album of music written specifically for me, and may include as well, I want to do the beautiful concerto Chris Brubeck, son of Dave Brubeck, wrote for me a couple of years ago that I premiered with the Maryland Symphony, conducted by Elizabeth Scholes, and have since done with a number of different orchestras, including Leonard Slatkin with the Detroit Symphony. So I still have a number of works that I have not yet recorded that have been penned for me. And in fact, this year I'll be premiering another concerto. This will be by a Spanish composer. And who knows, I may record that as well. That'll be by Enrique Palomar in the spring in Colorado.
Definitely sounds exciting. Sharon, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
My pleasure, and thank you for taking the time.